commentaries on the four last books of Moses, arranged in the form of a harmony. Volume 4 by John Calvin. Numbers chapter 12, verse 16, and chapter 13, verses 1 to 25. Chapter 12, 16. And afterward the people removed from Hazeroth and pitched in the wilderness of Paran. Numbers chapter 13. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men, that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All those men were heads of the children of Israel. And these were their names: of the tribe of Reuben, Shammua, the son of Zakur; of the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, the son of Hori; of the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh; of the tribe of Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph; of the tribe of Ephraim, Oshea, the son of Nun; of the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Raphu; of the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, the son of Sodai; of the tribe of Joseph, namely, of the tribe of Manasseh, Gadai, the son of Susai; of the tribe of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gemali; of the tribe of Asher, Sether, the son of Michael; of the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi, the son of Vophsi; of the tribe of Gad, Geuel, the son of Machi. These are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Oshea, the son of Nun, Jehoshua. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Get you up this way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not, and be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now, the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as men come to Hamath. And they ascended by the south, and came unto Hebron, where Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. The place was called the brook Eshcol, because of the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from thence. The repetition of the same narrative, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verses 19 through 25. And when we departed from Horeb, we went through all that great and terrible wilderness, which ye saw by the way of the mountain of the Amorites, as the Lord our God commanded us, and we came to Kadesh Barnea. And I said unto you, Ye are come unto the mountain of the Amorites, which the Lord our God doth give unto us. Behold, the Lord thy God hath set the land before thee. Go up and possess it, as the Lord God of thy fathers hath said unto thee. Fear not, neither be discouraged. And ye came near unto me, every one of you, and said, We will send men before us, and they shall search us out the land, and bring us word again by what way we must go up, and into what cities we shall come. And the saying pleased me well. And I took 12 men of you, one of a tribe. And they turned and went up into the mountain, and came unto the valley of Eshcol, and searched it out. And they took of the fruit of the land in their hands, and brought it down unto us, and brought us word again, and said, It is a good land which the Lord our God doth give us. Numbers 12:16. And afterward the people departed from Hazeroth. At first sight, Moses appears to be at variance with himself, for he here states that he sent the spies at God's command, whereas in Deuteronomy 1:22, he relates that he made this concession at the request of the people. But the two statements are easily reconciled. It is, indeed, unquestionable that God had regard to the infirmity and distrust of the people. For the spies are not sent to see in what direction the land was to be attacked, with which design two were afterwards sent by Joshua, but God had here no other object than to encourage them, when they else were cowardly and inert, to throw off their inactivity and eagerly to advance. The necessity of such a remedy was evidently shown when they all demanded this of Moses. The second narrative, therefore, is fuller, and in it Moses goes back further than he had done in the first, that is, that it arose from the timidity and pusillanimity of the people that he did not at once hasten whither God invited him, for if they had straightway obeyed, they would have won the land of their enemies without any delay, but they requested that a respite might be given them. It is, then, by no means inconsistent that Moses did, at the request of the people, what God at the same time enjoined, because he saw that they were otherwise hesitating, but little disposed to advance, and needed this stimulus. For if the spies had honestly performed their duty, the people would have been led forward as if they had seen the land themselves, which would have been the readiest means for putting an end to all delays. First, however, the place is described from whence the spies were sent, that is, at no great distance from Mount Sinai, although they had encamped twice, so that it was their third station. It has already been stated in chapter 10 that the cloud rested in the wilderness of Paran, which some understand to have been said by anticipation, kata prolepsin, as if Moses had said that, from the time when the people left Mount Sinai, they had not made any permanent halt until they came to that wilderness and there pitched their tents. But this opinion is by no means consistent, for it is clear that they stayed some time in Taberah, and many days were spent at the graves of lust, Kibroth Hataava, for there they were gorged for a month with the flesh of birds, and then the pestilence attacked them, which cut off many of them, for whose burial it was necessary to provide. Now, their next halt was for more than 7 days. It, therefore, appears probable to me that by the word Paran, a different place is not expressed, but that it is merely meant that, though they advanced, they still remained in some part of that wilderness. For, since the wilderness of Paran was in one direction contiguous to Mount Sinai, that name is sometimes given to it. For Moses certainly confounds them elsewhere, as also does the prophet Habakkuk. Deuteronomy 33:3, Habakkuk 3:3. Numbers 13:2. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man. If all had been taken from one tribe or from any single portion of the people, their fidelity might have been suspected by the others. God, therefore, would have each tribe assured by its own witness in order that their report might be the more unquestionable. All cause for jealousy was also to be taken away, lest if any tribe had been passed over and might have accepted against the messengers, whom it supposed to have been elected, in contempt of it. This then was the advantage of the equal distribution, lest any sinister suspicion or offense might disturb the unanimity of the whole people. Second, it is required that they should be possessed of personal dignity, since God commands that chief men should be chosen, whose testimony would be of greater authority. For it would have been easy to throw discredit upon obscure individuals. Since, however, both precautions were unsuccessful, it appears from hence that there is no counsel so wise and salutary as not to be capable of perversion by the wickedness of mankind. Thus this excellent providence of God rendered the people the more inexcusable. At the same time, God has reminded us once for all by this example, that, however those who seem to be like pillars may totter and stumble, or even fall altogether, still our minds must be supported by faith, so as not to give way. Their names are enumerated in perpetual remembrance of their ignominy, except in the case of two, Joshua and Caleb. For it was just that their crime should be handed down to all ages, and that the infamy of their perfidiousness should never be blotted out, since they endeavored, as far as in them lay, to bring to naught the promise and the grace of God. Moses gave the name Jehoshua, the son of Nun, in the spirit of prophecy, as a presage of the exalted function to which he was destined. Ambition is so rash that men are often disappointed in the result when they invent titles of honor of their own accord. But Moses was not induced by the blindness of affection to change the name of Hoshea into Jehoshua, but God directed his tongue and mind thus to commend beforehand him who was to be the future minister of their preservation. Still, it cannot be inferred with certainty from this passage at what time the new name was given him, for it is not specified that he was called Jehoshua at the time he was sent out. Nay, it is probable that he had been previously thus distinguished, that is, from the period in which he had been associated with Moses as his companion and minister in all important matters. Verse 18. And see the land, what it is. The counsel of Moses had this object, that the people might be made aware how rich and fertile the land was, for a barren country does not support a large population. And the healthfulness of a locality is inferred from the vigor of its inhabitants. He therefore chiefly insists on the goodness of the land and its abundant production of fruits. Still, perhaps, God would intentionally have the Israelites forewarned that they would have to do with strong and powerful enemies, lest they might be alarmed and discouraged at suddenly beholding them. But the main point was that the pleasantness and fertility of the land might allure them to take possession of it. Verse 22. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron. Their direct course was not indeed towards the south, but they proceeded along the southern border until they came to Rehob and Hamath, after having passed the mountains. Hebron, however, in which Abraham had sojourned, is specified from amongst the other cities, and it is probable that the three sons of the giant, who are here named, were in possession of that city. But some think that Anak is not a proper name, and is used by Enelage of the number for giants. In fact, giants are elsewhere called Anakim. Nor is there any doubt but that these three who are mentioned were formidable from their great stature and strength, as we gather from the book of Joshua. It is then equivalent to saying that this city was then possessed by warlike men, famous for their prowess. It will, however, appear from the end of the chapter that Anak was the proper name of a man whose sons were of excessive height. The antiquity of the city is afterwards signalized by comparison, that is, that it was founded 7 years before Zoan, one of the chief cities of Egypt, and of which mention is often made in Scripture. Heathen writers call it Tanis, and it is situated on one of the seven famous mouths of the Nile, which is called from the city Ostium Taniticum. Now, since the Egyptians gloried in their antiquity above all other nations, it is evident that the land of Canaan was well peopled immediately after the deluge. And this is a sign of its great fertility, for if the neighboring countries had been more so, they would not have settled themselves there by preference when they were at liberty to make their choice. A prolepsis is to be noted in the name of the valley of Eshcol, for it was afterwards that it began to be so called by the Israelites in memory of the remarkable cluster of grapes which Moses states to have been brought from hence, and this is immediately after specified. This audio recording was read by Michael Ives. I hope you found it enlightening and edifying. Visit westportexperiment.com for more audio resources, and where I write about parish missions, the care of souls, and all things Reformed.